This is .NET Cast with hosts Mark Baker and Nick Hemdahl.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.
And now introducing your host for .NET Cast, Mark Baker.
Welcome to .NET Cast. I'm your host, Mark Baker. Thanks for joining us again. With me tonight is my co-host, Nick Hemdahl. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mark. We're going to have another great show tonight on .NET. And don't forget, you can always find us on the web at www.ddj.com/podcast/.NET Cast/.
In this episode, Brian Noyes starts off talking about the Updater Application Block 2.0 as we dig into how it compares with ClickOne's technology available in the .NET 2.0 framework.
One of the features of the Updater Block was that you have pre and post plug-in points. It's an extensible framework where you can plug in any kind of step you want, pre and post install, or pre and post update, really, where you can run custom installers, you can put things in the GAC, you can do all those things I mentioned that I said you can't do directly through ClickOnce. So there's a number of more advanced scenarios like that where can you get it done with ClickOnce? Yes, but you have to either use the bootstrapper to do it or you have to use these kind of unorthodox workarounds to what ClickOnce was designed to do to get it done. Whereas Updater Block has specific plug-in points, part of its extensibility model to do that in a clean way. So through those discussions, we basically convinced them to go ahead and put out an update to the Updater Block, and that should be out very soon. There's no new functionality in it. It is pretty much the 2.0 version of the Updater Block made so that it will run on the .NET 2.0 version of the enterprise library. So Updater Application Block itself relies on the enterprise library, but the 2.0 version relied on the June 2005 version of Entlib, which was designed against .NET 1.1, and did not work with the January 2006 version of the enterprise library, which is designed against .NET 2.0. So this new version that's coming out is just basically a re-release of the 2.0 version of the Updater Block so it works with .NET 2.0 and the January Entlib 2.0.
Yeah, I know when we were out in Redmond in March that Eugenio mentioned that it's the .NET framework team actually used the Updater Application Block as a baseline, I guess, to come up with ClickOnce. That was one of the examples where the technology that the PNP group had come up with actually found its way back into the .NET framework.
Yeah, exactly. Part of the genesis of the Updater Block was a proof of concept of what they wanted to do with ClickOnce. And there was some people listening to this may have run across, there was some confusion out there because actually a precursor to that was something called the App Updater Component, which was truly a proof of concept put out by Jamie Cool, who was a program manager on the ClickOnce team. He put that out through got.net, and it was a very limited capability. Just automatic updating capability you could add, you know, through kind of drag and drop into a Windows Forms app. And it truly was a, you know, proof of concept. He was working with the ClickOnce team. He wanted to get some capability out there and give it a try. And so people refer to that as App Updater. The formal name for the block that we're talking about is the Updater Application Block, so kind of reversing the names. But a lot of times when people talk about the Updater Application Block, they'll call it the App Updater. And so there's confusion out there. Do you mean the App Updater Component or do you mean the App Updater Application Block? So if people stumble across that component's still out there on got.net, but I wouldn't use that. I would either go with ClickOnce or with the Updater Application Block.
So one last thing I think of with ClickOnce, though, is like the security implications of ClickOnce. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about that and some of the issues that people might need to be aware of in using it.
Sure. There's a couple aspects to it. I mentioned already that there's a security model built into ClickOnce that is designed around this concept that when the app runs, even though it's running physically from the local disk on the client machine, it pretends that it's running from whatever the URL was that it was launched from. So that's one of the security implications is you have to realize that by default the app's going to want to run in this restricted context, but if it needs more permissions, You have to configure that when you publish the app. You can do that through Visual Studio. There are settings that go into the application manifest that say this is the set of permissions that this app needs to run. So you need to understand, you know, exactly what is it that your app's going to do. Is it going to write to ctemp? Is it going to make web requests and so on? And you need to specify those as required permissions for the app when you publish it. And then the other aspect that ties in with that is how is it going to get those additional permissions if the context it's going to run under wouldn't have given those by default. And that's where I said the default behavior, unfortunately, from some people's perspective, is that it's going to prompt the user. So prompting the user in an enterprise environment is usually considered a no-no. You don't want to leave a trust decision in the end user's hand. That belongs to the administrators of the domain. So what ClickOne supports is a concept that I mentioned before called trusted publishers. It's probably a little too complicated to describe in detail here in this format.
Right.
But I can point people to a article I wrote last year in April. If they just go out to MSDN and search on ClickOne trusted publishers.
Okay.
They will come on an article I wrote for Microsoft that some of the stuff in that article is still actually the only documentation of some of these features in ClickOne. Because I just came upon an update for one of the things I said in that and went searching on MSDN, and there was nowhere else it was talked about. And so this prompting model I talked about, basically the base concept is there's a way to turn it off and take the decision out of the user's hands, make it so that the administrator can pre-deploy a publisher certificate to the client machines. So it does require kind of a one-time step to go out to all the client machines and say, here's a certificate. If any apps show up that are signed by this certificate, then go ahead and let them have whatever permissions they want. And then you can set a registry key, basically, that says don't ever prompt the user. Don't let them make the decision for permission elevation. And that way, basically, the only apps that will get to run through ClickOne are ones that come from a publisher that the administrator has explicitly granted permission to on the client machine.
Super.
I want to take a little indirect, I want to redirect here a little bit. I know that one of the attributes that you spoke of was the application needs to be distributed, correct?
Right.
Do you favor any technologies at one or the other? I mean, are you most likely doing web services as far as that type of technology, as far as communication technology?
Great question. I would definitely favor anytime you're talking about a smart client in general, and specifically a smart client that's going to be deployed through ClickOne, I would favor trying to keep my remote communications as loosely coupled as possible. And in a current day release technology timeframe, that would pretty much translate into web services. Your other choices there would be .NET Remoting or Enterprise Services. But both .NET Remoting and Enterprise Services introduce a degree of coupling there, and in fact, for big enterprise apps with release technology, I would favor enterprise services because of performance and security, but you have to do this extra step of deploying a proxy to the client, which requires an installer, which you can't do through ClickOne. So that's why enterprise services itself, which is basically complex for .NET, is not really compatible with ClickOne very well.
So I guess web services is a good trend. Translation into Windows Communication Foundation when that's ready to...
Right. So the kind of where I was leading with this is if you're talking purely about release technologies today, then web services would be a good answer. But if you're talking about a forward-looking architecture, especially given that Beta 2 of WinFX just released yesterday and there's a go-live license on it, and in particular the parts of WinFX are Windows Communication Foundation or WCF, Windows Presentation Foundation, or WPF, formerly known as Avalon, and Windows Workflow, the most baked part, really ready-to-go stuff in WinFX, they're all pretty mature, but the WCF part is really mature. It's been under work for 5-6 years. Myself and my colleague Yuval from iDesign have been involved in the system design review process in Redmond for the last few years running. And so we've been seeing this technology mature, and it really is ready to go. The WCF team was really ready to release while ago, and they're continuing to refine the product because they're going to ship with WCF, but they really could have released a while ago, and they've got a go-live license. So I would say if you're building an app today and it's going to release anytime beyond, like, today, I would take a serious look at using WCF for your remote communications, because it kind of gives you the best of both worlds. It gives you a single programming model where you can change your mind, and if you're on the local internet, you can use binary TCP communications. Just by changing a config file, you can switch that to doing web services, basically. You can add security. You can do transactions, remote transactions. There's all kinds of things that you layer on to WCF just by tweaking config files, and your app code doesn't have to change. And it's just the work I've done with WCF so far. Like I said, we do a lot of enterprise services work with customers, and doing enterprise services, it's a very rich rich framework. Like I said, very secure, very fast, but also very painful to develop with because of the complex underpinnings. The same kinds of applications built with WCF and working with recent customers is just, it's a breath of fresh air working with WCF. Mm. It's so much easier, so much more configurable, and it's just a treat to work with. It is complex. I don't want to sugarcoat it because of all those capabilities. You know, it's a breath of fresh air to someone who's already up to speed on the technology. It's a lot of new stuff to learn, but it is the, from now forward, it is the single thing you should look at for remote communications. And stop worrying about .NET remoting or web services or enterprise services or MSMQ, which each have their own programming model. WCF, you've got a single programming model, and you configure those aspects under the
Is there a good place to start? I mean,
good question. Right now we're at kind of an ugly little juncture where there is one or two books out there that are mostly stale. There was one written right when Beta 1 came out, about July of last year, that in September a new community tech preview came out that completely made all the code in it obsolete. So for high-level concepts about what WCF does, that one is called Programming Indigo by David Pallman. For high-level concepts, it's okay, but I would basically take the strategy of as soon as you see any code, avert your eyes. Because you're just going to learn code that it won't even
gotcha.
Run. Very, very soon now, my other colleague, Michelle Aruba-Stamonte, within the next, I think, couple of months, she's going to have a book out called WCF Jumpstart by O'Reilly and Associates. And that is a hands-on tutorial-style book, so that will be a very good place to start to pick that up and just work through all the samples and work through the tutorials and get some hands-on time with WCF. Another great resource, kind of a shameless self-plug here, is we do a Windows Communication Foundation masterclass.
Oh, great.
The first offering of that is in June, but that one's already sold out. The next one is in August. Michelle is teaching it in New London, Connecticut. Other resources, let's see, Yuval Lowy, my other colleague, is going to have a book come out, but that's not till 2007. And I would anticipate here in the next 3 to 6 months, you're going to see a whole slew of WCF books. Most authors in their right minds, because of the degree of volatility, they were doing quite a bit of refactoring, renaming, and stuff like that in the community tech previews over the last 6 months or so. So most authors in their right minds have just kind of put a hold on their book and were waiting for this Beta 2 to come out.
Yeah.
I would anticipate now that this Beta 2 is out, this is pretty darn close. They'll probably have a release candidate between now and RTM in November. November is when WCF will be available as a release technology. Between now and then, there will probably be a release candidate. You may see some minor changes to property names and that kind of stuff. I talked with Clemens Vasters is an architect on the WCF team, and I talked to him last week in the Netherlands, and he said there will be a few minor refactorings in the release candidate. So there will be some, quote, breaking changes if you were to ship a product today against Beta 2, but it's going to be very quick fix type of thing. There's no significant architectural changes between now and release.
So what's the future of smart clients do you see over the next few years with Vista coming out this year? WCF and WPF, how do you see it evolving?
Definitely, you know, there will be a slight shift there in terms of adoption of WPF. We haven't really talked about that at all, but WPF is the part of WinFX, the Windows framework, that is for building UI applications. It's an alternative to Windows Forms. I would not say that every single app out there that you're building with Windows Forms today, you should start building with WPF tomorrow. I just said that in terms of remote communications, you should switch gears almost immediately and start building on WCF. But I would not say the same thing about UI development. Windows Forms is still going to be viable for a long time to come, 5 to 10 years at least. The next version of the .NET framework, there's going to be further enhancements to Windows Forms. It's not going away just because we have an alternative in WPF. WPF is really focused on high-end visualization capabilities, 3D visualization, imaging, animations, things like that. If you need those kinds of high-end UI features, then WPF is where you want to be looking. But if you're talking about the mainstay of business applications out there today, you know, just putting data in, getting data out, and showing it in fairly two-dimensional forms and static forms on the screen, then Windows Forms is still going to be a great candidate for a long time to come, especially because even when WinFX releases in November, we're not going to have a released designer for WPF applications. That'll have to wait till the next version of Visual Studio, which will probably be sometime in 2007.
Well, that's all for this episode of .NET Cast. Send us an email at .NETcast@sunburstsoftware.com and let us know what you think of the show. Take care, everybody. The opinions expressed on .NET Cast are solely those of the participants and not necessarily those of its sponsors or CMP Media, its partners, or employees. .NET Cast is a CMP DevNet podcast and is produced by Sunburst Software at sunburstsoftware.com. Additional production support has been provided by Digital Context at digitalcontext.com. CMP DevNet is solely responsible for the content of .NET Cast.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.